It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
And that's right, you're tuned to Community Radio 3CR with a Friday Rave with me, Mercedes, and Jacob.
And me, Jacob, and Mercedes.
And now we're... As with our usual caveat, we're pre-recording this morning, so if anything happens between, what is it now, about 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock this afternoon, that's why we haven't covered it, but you, of course, are tuned to Community Radio 3CR at 855 AM on your old school dial. You might be tuned via 3CR Digital, via all the W's at 3cr.org.au.
Or through your state-of-the-art surveillance helicopter in the sky.
Course, which we'll talk a little bit more on, as always, a bit later in the show. But it's been a big week from the show. I was away last week, so thanks to Jake for taking the reins on that one and talking about what has happened. And since last Friday,
oh, what's happened? Anything happened in the world we need to comment on, mate?
Oh yeah, I think just the military incursion and the abduction of Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela.
Where's it going to, eh? Where's it? This has changed the way the world is working on so many levels. It's like the US have done, in some ways, the US have done this kind of thing before, and, you know, the POMs did it before them, the French have done it, everyone's done it. But it's a whole different way of doing it. Like, I reckon we should start, perhaps. I know we said we're going to do a special on them at some later stage, but to talk about the predictive markets and the way that people betted, and I'm going to call it betting, although they say it's not gambling, excuse me, on an invasion of Venezuela by a particular date, and apparently some insiders put a great deal of money on, and one bloke stood to win $400,000 US, which is, you know, $750,000 Australian. Now, it turns out Polymarket have knocked back that win, claiming that it wasn't an invasion, that they went in and just, it was a police operation. And it took Maduro out and took him back to the United States, blah, blah, blah. It was an invasion. Therefore, they're not going to pay out on that prediction. Now, we are going to talk about Polymarket in future weeks and Kalshi and all the rest of them, because they are a whole... They're bigger than the sports bet for war. They're a whole new way of analysing news and predicting news. But I guess what I've got to say is it's interesting that they've said it's not an invasion. And in some ways it's not. And while I condemn in the strongest possible terms everything that happened in Venezuela, there's still a part of me, which I've got to quite say frankly, has impressed me about the way they've moved in, minimum civilian casualties, taken the Maduros, put them on a boat and took them to New York and left the government in control, ostensibly, left the Venezuelan police and the military in control, ostensibly, and I say ostensibly because, of course, they all know that unless they do what the US say, they're going to be next. But it wasn't an invasion. I mean, previous US administrations would have just carpet-bombed Caracas. Would have killed thousands of civilians.
Yeah, and I think that the Trump administration and Pete Hegseth is going to see this as a massive win for the US in terms of, you know, look how good we are at doing what we said that we would set out to do, just irrespective of the contravention of international law, which we know the US doesn't give a fuck about anyway. But this is how, I mean, it's actually not being framed that much in the mainstream at the moment, because I feel like in the mainstream media, Greenland is now getting a big part of capturing the global audience at the moment. And I think that's a very deliberate strategy, because it's now taken very quickly for some, not all of us, of course, but taken, like, talking about Greenland, and I guess in discussions that we've had about it, it's now capturing the mainstream of going, oh, okay, well, the US has just done this in Venezuela. What's to stop them from doing it in Greenland? But I think that, that what all of that discussion is doing is taking the emphasis and the story and discussion about what's happened in Venezuela out of the mainstream.
Yeah.
And so putting it, you know, and as we spoke to Scott Ludlam on Saturday Kick-Ons a couple of weeks ago, you know, this strategy of just flooding it with shit.
Yeah, yeah. And read listeners, I should say at this point that we spoke to Scott Ludlam, as you say, a couple of weeks ago, for the Friday Rave Saturday Kick-Ons, which take place on Saturday morning between 9 and 10 a.m., filling in for Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remembered for Giselle and Youssef, actually, not Nasser, he's been away for a while, but who are taking a well-earned break. But this Saturday at 9 o'clock, we're speaking to Clinton Fernandez, who's been on the Friday Rave a few times before, but we've already recorded it, but I'm not going to talk about what he said, except to say he's written a book called Turbulence, which is Australian Foreign Policy in the Trump Era. And so you should tune in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. or go to the podcast, because there'll also be on the Friday Rave podcast. But, sorry, where did I start from? The way they're doing it is just totally, totally different. And we don't know, like, what would have happened? I mean, I'm sure the US had contingency plans, but it went so, dare I use the word, smoothly and efficiently, but what if it didn't? What if one of their planes was downed? What if they couldn't find Maduro? What if there some US soldiers were killed?
Or what if Maduro had been in the bunker, which would have taken, extended the operation out for weeks?
Yeah, yeah. What would have happened then? And how much of it was reliant on inside information? We just don't know anything at this point.
And I think it's going to be increasingly hard to actually not, you know, to know anything, because it'll be a closed book case.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, the Australian government's been extremely silent about it. Our foreign minister that I can find, that you can find, has said nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing about it. And so
Albo made this really kind of middle of the line, unsurprising, because that's the way they are. But, you know, it's, and I think what, you know, there has been some commentators that are suggesting that the Australian government's response, or Albo's response, it's talking about respecting international law for a peaceful transition, or non-escalation and a diplomatic transition.
Transition. Oh, look, he's been sitting on the fence so long, I'm sure he's got a, I'm sure he's got one of those pickets jammed firmly up his ass, to be honest. He couldn't get off if he wanted to.
But this, you know, a democratic transition, or not an escalation, it's just, again, this thing of saying, like, we urge parties not to escalate. It's like the US just came in, did a military operation, and abducted the president of Venezuela.
Yeah.
So how is that? Well, I mean, you know, the listeners will no doubt agree with us, and that's blindingly obvious, but Albo's response is already accepting that a transition is occurring.
And this is the response right around the world.
Yeah.
Really, even Russia and China have said very, very little. And Russia's had another boat, has had an oil tanker.
That was carrying no oil, I believe.
That was carrying no oil. It was probably carrying fentanyl, mate. It probably had thousands of bloody megalitres of fentanyl.
They could say it would be carrying anything, and we'll never know anyway.
And that's right. Maybe, for all we know, it was carrying oil.
Yeah.
We know nothing. And that's what's happening here. The space is being flooded, as Steve Bannon said during Trump's first election campaign, flooding the space with so much bullshit that it's important that we who oppose global capitalism and the Trump administration and the US administration, regardless of who the figurehead is, it's important that we don't fall into the trap, which a big part of the left often does. Anything it doesn't agree with, it says is fake news and bullshit. But anything it does agree with, or that adds weights to our own arguments, are seen as almost gospel.
Mm.
But the truth is, we know fuck all.
Yeah, we know very little. And I think that the response in the Western world anyway, which is like, it seems to me really interesting, even Australia's response, is that it's in, you know, that it seems to be that it's more in the national interest of the countries in Europe to appease the Trump administration rather than actually uphold international law. And we were talking about this earlier, of, you know, the last years of bringing in this idea of a global rules-based order, which we've spoken about on a Friday rave before, or you've spoken about for a long time on a Friday
rave.
And the global rules-based order, which is sort of this mechanism for emptying out the efficacy of international law. And Australia's kind of been beholden to this idea of the global rules-based order and thrown it around in reference to the Indo-Pacific. And also, you know, there's definitely been a shift where we're not seeing that anymore. But now I think Australia sees is now in a position where it's falling back on international law, the mechanisms of which have been emptied out, particularly in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And the global rules-based order, which is now that the US and Israel and war crimes can be committed with impunity.
With impunity. And I said, when they first started using this term, the international rules-based order, or the global rules-based order, back in the days of Gillard and Turnbull, I said then that the global rules-based order, what this was about, and the use of this term, was about undermining any kind of legitimacy of the United Nations. In the early, right up until the first decade of this century, the United Nations was still seen as the upholder of what is legal and what is illegal. We couldn't just say the United Nations is worthless and we're not abiding or listening to the United Nations, because that would be being too honest. So what we had to do is not say we're not going to follow any international law. We developed this new concept of a global rules-based order, which makes us, well, which spreads the lie that we're following a unspecified set of Western values outside of the United Nations framework. And if anything, what are the tempted to do was paint itself as more legitimate than the United Nations.
Mm.
And that served its purpose, and it destroyed the credibility of the United Nations. Everyone stopped talking about the United Nations says this, the United Nations says that, and it all became the GRBO. But now that they know they've done that, they no longer need to keep using it because it's become a joke. I mean, the United Nations can even now do a report, call a spade and talk about Israel committing genocide in the occupied territories and Gaza. And everybody says, yes, so what? It may be genocide, it may not be genocide.
Yeah.
And our own government, who's a signatory, of course, founding member, of course, of the United Nations, one of the drivers of the founding of the United Nations 60-something years ago, has turned around and has not contradicted and said the United Nations is wrong, but has basically said, in the understanding the United Nations are saying genocide is happening, the Australian government is saying reference to it being genocide is actually Semitism and hate speech and will be outlawed.
Mm.
So that's what the whole GRBO was about, has led to.
Mm-hmm. But now Australia is falling back on using the terms like we respect international law. And we know that that's total bullshit, because we've seen genocide being carried out over the last 2 years by Israel with impunity. But now it's like, okay, what mechanisms do Australia... And it's sort of become like international law when it's spoken by governments is sort of like a moniker that it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we respect that. It's like, meh.
Yeah, and we don't need to point out to Friday Rave listeners or 3CR listeners in general of what would happen if China decided that Taiwan was a threat to its sovereignty and did a similar operation in Taipei with the Taiwanese president. I forget, his name just doesn't come to me off the top of my head. But and took him back and tried him.
Oh, it would be a totally different
totally different
story. Penny Wong might actually say something.
Yeah.
But the I think, you know, the Greenland thing is interesting. We did speak on a Friday rave about the a new shipping route being established.
Yes.
Yeah.
Across the top of right within the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, within the Arctic Circle. And so, again, I think that in terms of the sanctions on Venezuelan or boats coming out of Venezuela.
Yep. And on Russian oil.
And on Russian oil and Iran and China.
Mm-hmm.
The premise for the US going into Venezuela under narco-terrorism, which we all know is bullshit, but now just being very opaque about it and saying that, you know, we run the country, that the US runs Venezuela, and it, irrespective of if it's a Venezuelan government, Venezuelan military and Venezuelan police, the economy is now under the control of the US government.
Of the United States. And look, I just want to be clear on one point. We keep saying, as you said, and I agree with you, the whole thing about Venezuela being narco-terrorist is bullshit. But here's the point. Even if it was true, even if it was true that the Venezuelan government was involved in a campaign to ship fentanyl to the United States of America and to basically as a weapon of war to keep all its people smacked out, even if that were true, and I'm not suggesting for a moment it is, that still does not give the United States the right to do what it did.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we spoke a little while ago, but I mean, I get just back to that kind of point that even at the UN, I think it was the General Assembly, the US ambassador was saying, you know, it was really transparent, you know, just said it out there and said, no, we can't have a hostile government running and in control of the resources.
Yeah.
And we know that's what it's about, but it's also not necessarily about the production of that resources of where they're going. It's just about controlling the capacity for production
or
the capability for it. And so, you know, I think when talking about the military industrial complex, you know, we're talking about building capability or defense capabilities is not actually building them to be used as much as the potential to be used. And it's the same way in terms of the control of Venezuelan assets, is that it's an oil assets, is not necessarily that the production is going to ramp up, there's going to be changes, but it's about having the control of them in order to determine leverage
and to stop it if they want. Like we're talking about, and we've talked a long time on this show, and every lefty analyst has talked about the US encircling of China, for example, and the encircling of Russia. Prior to that, the encircling of the Soviet Union and the encircling of Iran. And encirclement isn't just about gaining access to resources. It's about, as you so correctly put it, the controlling of their resources. It doesn't matter. Like with the encircling of China and with the US operations to stop China exporting, which is what the South China Sea is about, which is a big part of what Iran's about. It's, and their interference in a whole lot of Central Asian economies and governments, policies. It's not about that they want to take anything off China, although they probably do, as much as it is stopping China supplying other parts of the world.
Mm.
So it's about control of resources rather than theft of resources, which is theft of opportunity.
Mm. And also the capacity to predict and control future markets.
Yeah.
To make money for investors in the present.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
I mean, we did talk a few weeks ago about Paul Singer's hedge fund called Elliott Investment Management, I believe, and who had put in a bid to their kind of, they buy up debts. And Paul Singer is Marco Rubio's man.
Yep.
And so Citgo, he put in a bid to take over Venezuelan state-owned oil manufacturers, Citgo. And so even though that's not approved, it has been suggested at the moment that Citgo are following the US, I don't know what even what you'd call it, in Venezuela.
Yeah,
actions
yeah.
in Venezuela. That Citgo are considering resuming the purchase and refining of Venezuelan oil, which had previously been sanctioned since 2019. So even before even before the US went in and abducted Maduro and bombed all the military bases, this was already in play.
Yeah, and let's face it, because we're talking about, as I say, it's about control. To some extent, whether Elliot gets control or not, or gets to oil or not, they've already made squillions.
Yeah, they're buying by buying up the debt.
On speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, by buying up the debt. It's ridiculous. Anyway, there are other things we need to talk about.
Yes, well, we've probably only got about 10 minutes left, actually.
Well, the other thing I want to talk about, of course, is that there's a Palestine protest on Sunday, the 11th of January. And the Victorian Police had a blanket ban on protests and certain activities within the greater CBD.
So it was actually a designated area. Increasing the stop and search powers for 6 months. It was supposed to be running until May of this year.
But they just called it off today.
Today.
And I wonder how that's got to do with the legal challenge that went against it, although they haven't admitted that that's what it's about, or what's happening. But the designated area in the greater CBD is no longer
as of midnight tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So whether that's in order to let the Palestine protest take place, or whether it's in order to let the fascists march against us,
yes,
or whether it's, you know, any number of other things, but just to let people know that order is no longer in place.
Yeah, as of tonight. Now, I mean, unsurprisingly, the protest ban in New South Wales has been increased in another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Already. But another thing that we want to talk about was recently Rex Patrick in Michael West Media released an FOI, FOI documents, rather, in relation to a memorandum of understanding between the Australian Federal Police and the Department of Defence in relation to the AFP's AUKUS Command, which is a new division.
It's been around about 6 months now, I think. Maybe a bit longer.
Maybe a bit longer. So the FOI documents, we don't know when they've come about, but of course the time that takes to get an FOI now is expanding, and of course they were heavily redacted. But the FOI talks about the AFP's AUKUS Command, which has its strategic responsibility is protective security services to, quote, specified defence bases under the Defence MOU. So what this AUKUS Command is, I think there's four divisions within the AUKUS Command, which is a division of the AFP plus a K9 unit and another unit. But anyway, there's six teams, I guess,
yep,
at the ready under AUKUS Command. And the focus is specifically when US and UK subs are going to be coming into Western Australia out of Stirling.
Well, that's what they're saying. They're saying that in... look, older listeners might remember the days when the Pacific Peace Fleet and Sydney Peace Squadron used to go out against US warships. I came down as part of the Sydney Peace Squadron. I came down to Melbourne in 1988 to go out in kayaks and the rest of it against a US warship coming into Port Phillip Bay. But we used to go out and stop the warships coming in just by... Mm-hmm. And they're concerned that a repetition of that kind of thing, the same kind of tactics that the Rising Tide Mob are using against coal ships.
Yep.
The operations of AUKUS submarines, being US submarines, basically. But as well as that, they're also going to be guarding all the bases.
Defence bases. And, I mean, that includes Pine Gap. There's reference to Pine Gap in the
documents. Long way from submarines, Pine Gap, mate.
Yeah. And also, I mean, given that we don't know the specificities of what a defence base is, and they're not, you know, they're not listed, I mean, does this include any weapons manufacturer? And there's very specific anti-protest sentiment that is in the designated role of what the AUKUS command is.
It's basically to stop any protest which will hamper the successful implementation of AUKUS.
Mm.
Now, that means that could be a rally in the middle of a city. That could be a blockade of an arms company or a picket of an arms company. That could be the recording of a Friday rave.
Yeah.
And that could be anything they deem it to be. And this is the problem with these laws, with all laws. They're put in terms so vague that they could be used to justify anything.
Yeah, and so it's a rapid response capability, they call it, for what is quoted as public order management operations. Mm. And I think it's also necessary to note here that part of that training of these rapid response teams is protester negotiation, protester removal, but this is a quote, public order management munitions delivery.
Right, so that means they'll supply flashbangs and rubber bullets and weaponry that we don't even know they have yet.
Yeah. Weaponry that was tested out maybe at Land Forces, sold at Land Forces in Melbourne year before last. And of course Land Forces is going to be this year in Perth.
Yep.
So who knows what's to come or where those teams are going to be deployed, but we can probably guess what's going to happen. And
And we can also assume that that would include, when it says manage protests, in order to manage protests, you need to manage the protest movement.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be all kinds of infiltration. And that doesn't mean just direct infiltration, but they infiltrate by any number of means. And I know it's a long time ago now, but read the book, I think it's called, what's it called, Underground, by... a former British cop who was infiltrated the protest movements.
The environmental protests? Animal rights. Yeah.
Yeah, Mark Kennedy, I think his name was. Yeah, Undercover, it was called, Undercover. Yeah.
If you want to read a little bit more about AUKUS Command, Michael West Media has it up on their website.
Yeah.
But that's about all we've got time for this week on a Friday rave. Make sure to tune in tomorrow
9 a.m.
at 9 a.m. Where we chat to Clinton Fernandez about his latest book, Turbulence, Australian Foreign Policy in the Trump Era. And we will catch you more next week, where I think we'll talk more about Polymarket.
Let's do a Polymarket special next week, unless, of course,
we're going to do it this week.
Move into Colombia, or who knows, maybe Beijing will do an abduction of Donald Trump.
Oh, who knows?
Well, apparently it's okay. It's all legal now.
That's the norm.
Yeah.
That's the norm. Keep it locked to 3CR 855 AM. That's enough for us this week, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.